conversation amongst that group, as well as our questions that we may have and comments on the subject. In the packet, you'll see an updated Senate Education Committee calendar. Our next meeting will be Monday. We'll focus on future high schools, redesign programs, early college opportunities. That evening, we'll continue our tours and site visits by going to Edina, looking at testing, school calendar issues, early childhood, and funding. I want to thank Senator Bonoff and Senator Saltzman for outstanding jobs in organizing the local hearings. I've had very great feedback from the people that participated and others that attended, and look forward to the upcoming hearings. We do have some additional requests for the inclusion for hearings in the districts. It's going to be tougher to accommodate, but we will do our very best. And Senator Michelle, if you had anything you'd like to say about the upcoming meeting on Monday for Edina?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm feeling quite challenged by the incredible meeting at Minnetonka. I was not able to attend that one, but I understand from Senator Jungbauer that the soup and sandwiches was a big hit.
As that.
And so,
and
I,
Mr.
think
Chair,
there's a,
they were
there's,
also
a few models
night,
for me.
Right.
Yeah,
they set the bar.
The bar has been set very high. Thank you, Senator Bonoff.
Rigorous answer,
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Saltzman.
We had excellent soup and sandwiches last night as well.
And Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hand.
Could I ask maybe Senator Michelle if you could make sure there's cake? You do that for us.
Okay, enough of that.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hand, you're making fun of those good bars that they had?
Senator Hand, I look forward to visiting your community college out there in Eden Prairie.
That's right, thank you.
Eden Prairie High School.
Right. Our sports facility.
And if we could go to the first item, the confirmation of the board of Perfect Center for Arts Education, and for those members that are recommended, if they could please approach the table. And we'll ask each of you to identify yourself. And we do have a packet with the background information, including disclosures, et cetera, and your statement. But if you could each identify yourself and give a minute or so overview. Welcome.
Welcome, Chairman Wieger. My name is Peter Adolfson. I am a Perpich board member. I chair the Finance Committee. Background, I have 23 years United States Navy, retired a commander. I have 2 years as state representative, District 42A. And I have an MBA in finance and a BA from Gustavus, like Senator Hand, in business.
Great. Excellent. Thank you.
It's a pleasure to be here. It's first time for me. My name is Alex Plekish. I was appointed to the board, I believe, last July. I am a resident of Wayzata. My background, briefly, educationally, I have a bachelor's degree in aerospace engineering and physics from the Naval Academy, an MBA from the University of Chicago, and advanced work at Harvard and some other places. I also am a retired military officer. I was in the Marine Corps as a fighter pilot for most of my career. I also have an arts and music background, which is a bit unusual for somebody with my career. I spent a fair amount of time in a symphony orchestra and way back when had a scholarship to the Art Institute of Chicago. But it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Senator Wigger. And to all the other senators, thank you. My name is Howard Wilson. I'm principal of Four Seasons A-plus Elementary School in St. Paul, an arts integrated school, and we were also the first all-year-round school in St. Paul. I represent District 2 as a member of the board at Perpich. My background in the arts began 33 years ago when I started my career as a music and theater teacher in middle school and high school. That love continues in me, and the work at Perpich affords me an opportunity to share that love in many other ways. It's a pleasure to serve on the board at Perpich, and looking forward to more years ahead.
Thank you. Questions?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Olsen.
I had a daughter a number of years ago, that looked at attending the Purbridge School. So we were out there, and I got to be honest with you. You guys are pretty straight-laced for the kind of students that I saw there, and not, you know, these artsy type are pretty, they have a lot of, you know, new ideas and different ideas and may not want to follow the normal path of a regular student. So how do you react with those kinds of students? I was so interested to hear your military background with the music background.
It seems like that's being mainly directed at me, so I guess I'll answer it.
Mr. Plekosh?
One of the things I didn't mention is that I have a very deep passion for kids. One of the many things that I do, I am also an admissions officer for the Naval Academy. So on that respect, I do interview the kids and their parents. I make presentations at high schools and other organizations. In fact, I just had an opportunity to present to two groups of kids at Wayzata. And overriding that is that I have a fundamental love of kids and the impact that people can have on kids of all kinds. I can relate to the art kids and the music kids because that was a passion of mine earlier in my life. I still maintain friendships with my music and art colleagues going way back even to grade school, if you can believe that. It's all about kids, I think. And to me, it's a matter of just providing governance and providing leadership for an institution like that. It's a passion.
Thank you.
Chair Wieger and Senator Olsen, I'll respond also. I have a daughter who's an artist, so that's not so unusual to me. In addition to that, I was most recently on the Hopkins LAC committee for a couple of years until I had been overcome by events at home. I have a wife with cancer, so I've had to scale back a little, but I thoroughly enjoy working over there and enjoy the environment.
Thank you.
Senator Olson, think of it as a costume that I'm wearing.
Okay.
I play many roles, I wear many hats, and one of the things we do through Purbridge is to help the artist in the child to grow. We're there to provide access to the arts and public education in the arts and through the arts, and I think that when you take this coat off, there's a sleeve that can be rolled up, and sometimes that happens.
Thank you.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think one thing about the Purbridge Center is that we've been blessed since the beginning of it with some outstanding leadership, and I think the board has a key role in doing that. And so I think we need talented people from different perspectives that can assure that kind of leadership continues and that they have the support and the backing and advice for the various functions. It isn't all art. It's the administration and the management of an enterprise, and a lot of communications with parents and others, and establishing the kind of policies that will allow it to continue, and for young people to thrive and having this choice for their schooling. So I respect that. I'm delighted to see the variety that's there. And when you're ready for a motion, I'd love to make the motion to recommend their approval to the Senate for confirmation.
Yeah, Senator Olson makes the motion for approval of the confirmation. We'd also like to add the other nominees. In addition to Peter Dolphson, Alex Plekosh, and Howard Wilson, we would include Penny Johnson, Roberta Jones, and Sonia Peterson. They're not here, but very qualified.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sure they are excellent and give some gender balance at the very least. So I would include all of them in my motion.
Is there any further questions? Is there anyone in the audience that would like to address? Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to comment before we vote, I just wanted to say that how much I have appreciated my work with you on the Hopkins Legislative Action Coalition, Mr. Adolphson, and so I'm honored to be able to vote for you today. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bonoff.
And in behalf of the committee, thank you. And we do plan on going out to the center as well for one of our visits. On Senator Olson's motion, all in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried. Thank you. Item two, confirmation of the Board of School Administrators. For those recommended, please approach. And welcome.
Glad to be here.
And if you'd like to start, then please state your name and a minute overview of yourself and whatever you'd like to share on your reason for serving.
Thank you very much, Senator Riga. Members of the committee, my name is Ram Raj Singh. Most people know me as Ram. I am the Director of Community Education for School District 196, Rosemount Apple Valley Eagan. This will be my second term on the Minnesota Board of School Administrators, and I'm very, very proud to be part of that team that is working to have the best quality licensed administrators in our elementary and secondary schools in our state. My background, I have a master's degree in education from University of St. Thomas, bachelor's in public administration from the University of Minnesota. I have an education degree from the University of London. I'm a transplant from Guyana, South America. I'm very happy to be here. This is my home. I live in Burnsville, and I do serve on the Burnsville-Eagan Telecommunications Commission. I have a meeting tonight trying to do my part in helping our residents to have a better life. I have been here since 1974, became a citizen in 1980. I'm married, and I have two grown children. I'm very happy to be here, and it's a pleasure to serve on the Minnesota Board of School Administrators.
Thank you very much.
I do serve as their legislative chair and the variance committee chair.
Yes, and we look forward to that legislation that Ms. Butlers will prepare. Representative Rhodes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Jim Rhodes, and it's a pleasure to be here as well. I am currently the legislative director for Department of Administration and the Office of Enterprise Technology. I did serve 12 years on the St. Louis Park School Board and 12 years in the legislature. I do not have all the degrees that my associate does. Actually, I graduated from the University of Minnesota with an associate arts degree. And if you want to get into the military like the past presenters, I actually was a musician in the military. There are those as well. And I still interact heavily with my community in St. Louis Park. I am still active in mentoring young people in not only government but also as young musicians. And I still work in the schools donating musical instruments, performing with bands in the high school and junior high and elementary school, and keep those ties together. I also serve on many foundations.
Thank you. Questions? If not, Senator Carlson, we have a motion.
Yes, well, I'd like to make a comment. Mr. Ram Singh is one of the more honored members of our administration in District 196, Rosemount, Apple Valley, and Eagan, and he comes with high recommendations from our district, and I would like to make the motion. Thank you.
Okay, and we will add Louise Sundin as well for the confirmation list. Presents, again, a great resume, and we're honored to have her included as well. On Senator Carlson's motion that we approve the confirmation for the Board of School Administrators, specifically Jim Rhodes, Ram Raj Singh, and Louise Sundin. Further discussion? Not all in favor, indicate aye.
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 Opposed, no.
Aye.
Carried. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Confirmation of the Board of Teaching. I believe we have Charlene Delaney and Hassan Zaman. Welcome.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. Start off?
I'd like to start off. Good afternoon. I'm Charlene Delaney. I'm a work experience coordinator at Eagan High School, which is part of the Rosemount Apple Valley Eagan School District. I'm serving my 30th year in that capacity, but I was struck this fall as I entered my classroom that it was 40 years ago that I did so. Mm-hmm. Every year has gotten better. I've taught nursery, kindergarten, I've taught at the university level, and I'm now at the high school level. I spend my summers for the last 16 years teaching and leading teachers to Poland to serve in that capacity with UNESCO. Love my job. I love the role that I played for my profession on the Board of Teaching. We have served now for a year and 7 months, so I'm glad to be here today.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Honorable Senators, thank you for giving me the opportunity to introduce myself to you today. My name is Asad Zaman, and I have been nominated to serve on the Minnesota Board of Teaching. I was born in Bangladesh and came to the United States in 1992. I attended the Minneapolis Community College and the Carson School of Management at the University of Minnesota. There, I served in the student governments of both institutions, and I was also a policy fellow at the Hubert Humphrey Institute of Public Affairs from 2004 and 2005. I remain grateful for the high quality of academic and extracurricular experiences I received at these noteworthy Minnesota institutions. I have sought to give back to the community. I currently serve on the President's Advisory Council at the Inver Hills Community College. I previously served on the Executive Board of the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools and on the Minnesota Academic Standards Committee for Science in 2003. I'm a certified management accountant and bring this experience in my role as the Executive Director of Tariq Ibn Ziyad Academy, an elementary charter school in Inver Grove Heights. We're a 5-star school in reading and a 3-star school in math. Our academy has a track record of innovative solutions. We serve 325 students with over 90% poverty and 85% English language learners. Despite such overwhelming challenges, our academy has outperformed many suburban school districts in reading and math, as measured by the statewide MCA tests in 2006. We were also tied for third place in reading among all charter schools in the state of Minnesota. With many other leaders in the Muslim community, I also helped increase the political participation of American Muslims in the last two elections. I'm honored to have been nominated to the Minnesota Board of Teaching and look forward to serving in the state of Minnesota. I look forward to continuing a tradition of quality educational leadership and increasing educational diversity in the state of Minnesota. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Questions? Senator Olsen.
Well, Ms. Delaney, I see here that you worked on your master's in Hawaii.
Yes.
And you came back. I mean,
America's heartland.
That's got to be something. I would move approval of these two to be on the State Board of Teaching.
Is there, on Senator Olsen's motion, is there anyone in the audience that would like to address the committee? Any further discussion? If not, all in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Carried. Thank you very much for your service. We appreciate it. Item 4, accountability, school testing and reporting. The most important item the policy committee will be addressing this session, and perhaps always. Expectations and how that is reported to students, parents, teachers, the community. We're going to start with a presentation from the Department of Education. Commissioner Segrin's not able to join us, gives her greetings, but we have Dr. Dirk Mattson, who would be the lead on this issue, and I believe Kathy Wagner is here as well. And we'll have a slide presentation. We'll have approximately 30 to 40 minutes with Dr. Mattson, and then we're going to have a panel of others that are listed. And I've also asked Dr. Mattson if he can be available to react to questions, perhaps a conversation with the panel on their observations, and to see what are areas that everyone agrees on, including us on the committee. So with that challenge, that background, we welcome the department and ask Dr. Mattson to proceed. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Very grateful for the opportunity to be here with you today. My name is Dirk Mattson. I am the Director of Research and Assessment for the Minnesota Department of Education. That's my official title. My working title, more commonly, is the epitome of all that is evil in education today.
Okay.
That's, but they enjoy that.
Yeah.
I do enjoy the job and the opportunity to tell you, talk to you today about testing. I come to you not only as a director of testing, I was a junior high school teacher. I was a district level administrator. I directed curriculum. I directed testing, everything from gifted and talented to Title I programs. I was even in charge of district nursing for a while. So I have worn all of the hats that my colleagues in the field continue to wear as they deal with the issues of testing. What I'm going to present to you, yeah, thank you, excuse me one second, I made slides backwards. What I'm going to present to you this afternoon is essentially 4 points. I want to give you an overview of the 2007 Minnesota assessments, and they will sound numerous, and I'll try and work through those weeds with you. I want to tell you a little bit about how tests are constructed in Minnesota. These five most commonly asked questions about testing in Minnesota, and members that were at the meeting last night in Woodbury, I found it quite interesting. I had prepared this slide presentation before that meeting, and I'm pleased to say I hit four out of the five before I got there, so I'm batting pretty well.
Excuse me, Doctor. For members, the outline is also in a handout. We have a lot of paper there. Make sure that you have that.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then finally, I want to tell you a little bit about a vision for Minnesota assessments as best I can. Again, I'm going to cover some topics that were covered last night by members of the community, my colleagues in Woodbury there in Stillwater. Essentially, the name of the game here, the end result, is about student learning. And there are a lot of factors, and you heard several folks talking about a ripple effect of testing and how that affects it. Student learning is at the top of that circle, and we know that in testing. I often tell people I do not get paid by the number of tests that I make. So it is not to my advantage to come up with new tests that serve no purpose. And I, as an implementer, try to work with stakeholders to think long and hard about that. On the far left is summative testing. And that's basically my business and the business of roughly 25 staff that work with me to build quality assessments for Minnesota. There are many other circles here, and we know that there are many other things that impact student learning, and there are many other measures of student learning. The big test is the Minnesota Comprehensive Assessments. I want to give you an overview of what we have in 2007. And now we're in Series 2. Series 2 indicates that we have moved to align the test with the new Minnesota academic standards, and we call them new in our world because we now have moved the test to that point. But in 2003, as you recall, reading and math, there were new standards that were adopted. Now the test is testing those particular standards, the MCA1s, if you will. We're testing the profile of learning. So now the shift is complete. We're testing mathematics in grades 3, 8, and 11, reading 3, 8, and 10. And this fulfills not only federal statutes for No Child Left Behind, but it fulfills state statutes as well, that this language is in state statute about which grades are tested and in which subjects. A requirement in 2008 is that our science test be moving forward. That's a requirement of No Child Left Behind. You will know that even though the science test is required at this time in the current authorization of No Child Left Behind, it does not count toward adequate yearly progress. It is not part of that mix of these nine cells that people talked about last night, et cetera. It's just a requirement that the state administer that test. And so that's where we're heading. I'll talk a little bit more about that as we go on. This coming year is the first time that we'll have the opportunity to actually present some kind of growth indicator on that. This is the first time that we've had tests in subsequent grades, grades 3 through 8, in mathematics and reading. And we anticipate providing a growth score from grade to grade within those six grades. It's a challenging thing to do from a measurement theory standpoint. It can be done, and other tests do it. And this is how we're doing it, in essence. It's a very simple view of the design. We're taking eight items from grade 4 and moving them down to grade 3, and taking eight questions from grade 4 and moving them up to grade 5, and continue on with the process. The difference here is those items don't count toward the student's grade level score, but they are going to help us determine where that student is in this progression. And so that's part of our design of where we're heading with this particular assessment in the MCA2s. We can only do this effectively with the tests that are given in consecutive grades. So, for example, when science comes online in grade 5, grade 8, and high school, we don't anticipate giving a growth score on those. That's a very challenging thing to do with those significant gaps in those grades. Tell you a little bit about where we have to go when we build the tests. We have to fulfill both state and federal law. The requirements of No Child Left Behind leave us with these things. We have to develop a test that is the same standards for all students. It must be measuring all the same standards. Now, again, we could probably have another whole conversation about is this right or wrong in No Child Left Behind. These are what No Child Left Behind leaves us out of the law. We're required to test the same knowledge and skills assessed for all students. So we can't ask some students about this part of mathematics and another group of students another subpart. We have to assess all the standards and assess all the students equally on those. It has to be the same assessment, according to No Child Left Behind, for all children. So we aren't able, and again, as much as I might have thoughts otherwise, we aren't able to say, okay, well, you're reading at about a third grade level, but you're in fifth grade. We'll give you the third grade test. The federal requirements say that we need to give that assessment for the students that are on that grade level, and all students have to take that. They have to be aligned to the state's content standards, and I'm going to talk in a little bit more detail about why this is so very important and what are some of the challenges about that. They have to be technically sound, that is, psychometrically sound in the science of test measurement. And then we have to provide evidence to the Secretary of Education that we have done all of these things and we have created technically sound tests. It was mentioned last night that testing is only one element of determining a student's progress in their achievement. And there is nobody that would agree with that statement more than myself and the staff that I work with. We know we are developing a measurement instrument for a day at a time. And this is just a graphic that comes from the work of Victoria Bernhardt that talks about, you heard the word if you were there last night, about data management. And this talks about all of the elements that schools try and slice and dice information into to get answers to questions. Not important that you're able to read every question, but the point is that there are multiple ways to look at data. The bottom circle there of that diagram is where assessments fit in. And assessments, standardized formal assessments, are only one type of assessment of student learning. So we recognize, most certainly, that there are other elements there. We have to, every student in the state under the federal legislation has to, and this is true for every other state, has to participate in the state's content standard tests. But we do have some alternatives. One of them is the English language learners that we're able to deal with this population of students in a different way. Minnesota is on the leading edge of trying to provide a math test for these students that is essentially what we call plain English or sheltered English. It's the same content, it's the same rigor as that math test, but it's trying to get at the nutshell of what the mathematics is going on in the MCA2s. And this test, because we need an acronym for it in education, is our MTEL. In reading at this time, we don't have an option for an alternate test for English language learners. And if you think about that, I'm not sure to demonstrate proficiency in reading what we would test in another. We have to test in the English language. So we don't have an option at this time. We are looking at some options on how to combine our reading test with the requirements of Title III, which is a part of the federal legislation specific to English language learners and their proficiency. Another common question we get is about students with special needs, and they have to take this test too, kinda. They take either this MCA2 if they do not need any accommodations. They may take the MCA2 with accommodations, and that's something that's dealing with the setting of how the test is presented, the presentation. So I might take it in a small room, response or timing. And accommodations do not change the rigor of the test. They don't make the test easier for the special education student. That's not the intent. An accommodation is to level the playing field. It's often referred to similar to glasses. And I'm wearing an accommodation right now, and with that, I would be probably on slide 58. So accommodations are available for those special education students. We have another test that we're developing for those students with the most significant cognitive disabilities. And this is the group of students that are significantly cognitively delayed. This is the test that probably, this is new this year. we had an option from the federal government: either test everyone on the MCA2s, give them the paper and pencil test, and let them bubble in the answers, and these are students who may have medical conditions, severe cognitive disabilities, or you can develop a test that is appropriate for them. So this is a performance-based test. It's a one-on-one administration, and we're working on developing this test to be ready for this year. We're still challenged by folks who will say, you know, those students should be exempted. We should let those students not have to test. And again, it's a policy conversation about No Child Left Behind, and one that we could have for a long time. The requirements are I have to provide a test, and I don't want to, from my own heart and also from what's right about testing, provide the MCA2s. That's not the right test for these students. There is another group of students that have the good fortune, if you will, to participate in additional testing, and this is also another requirement. All of the tests I just got done describing are dealing with Title I of No Child Left Behind and also state statute. As well, the state and the federal government both use results of this test. In Minnesota, we use the results of this test for some English language learner funding and so on, and having to require participation in this test. This is testing those students who are not proficient in the English language and what is their language proficiency for academic English. And so we have two tests of that. We're required to administer all four of those modes: reading, writing, listening, and speaking. And we do it as quickly as possible. We do it as efficiently as possible. Am I pleased that we have to do another test for a population that probably is going to have the most challenge moving through that test? Absolutely not. And we're working on different avenues for how to combine this test with our Title I test, and again, having conversations with the federal government about being able to do that. I want to take you through the graduation tests very briefly. The committee will know that in 2005, legislation was enacted that eliminated or phased out the basic skills test. That test of minimum competency that you know from eighth grade is now no longer. It's being sunsetted with the students that last participated in it. And now the requirement is that students will graduate showing proficiency on the written composition in grade 9, reading in grade 10, and math in grade 11. And I'll talk more about these as we go along. You will see, I can tell you, coming from the department, some legislation to try and clarify some technicalities about this language. The two bullets on top are the language that's currently in Statute 120B. And that says for grade 8 students that were in grade 8 that year, only the BSTs. That's basically saying, here's the sunset. If you were in that system, you're going to finish under that system. The next bullet talks about only the Minnesota Comprehensive Assessments, MCA2s, and reading, math, and writing will fulfill the graduation standards. Well, we don't have a writing MCA2, so we're going to come and say, can we help clean that language up a little bit? And we've got some other things that we think will be beneficial to students as well. By doing this, we were able to eliminate two state tests that we give. We use the federal test to serve both purposes, the state test and the federal requirements. You heard a lot about, if you were there last night, no one test can do everything. And so I will tell you, we squeeze it as hard as we can to get it to do as much as we can, but then there comes a point where no longer will this test be able to do more unless we add more questions onto it and make it bigger, longer, et cetera. Just to give you an idea of where students are as they go through this, and again, some of the legislation proposed to try and clean up the technicalities around this. And a ninth grader who's in grade 9 this year, of course, they'll take the writing test. This is essentially the old BST in writing that was in 10th grade. Next year, they'll move on and take the MCA2 in reading, and they can retest in writing if they didn't pass it by that time. In 11th grade, they'll take the MCA2 in mathematics, and they'll be able to retest in both writing and reading at that time. And then if they have any of those tests that they are not proficient in, they'll be able to retest. Now, the next slide is a little complicated, but I want to try and show you how we're trying to squeeze every drop of usefulness out of this one particular test. So this is, again, the 10th grade reading or the 11th grade math. We first have to fulfill, or at least I'm going to put on my slides, to fulfill federal requirements for No Child Left Behind. And what we do is we have a little test in there. It's 50 questions long. And we've got some questions we call common and some that are MCA2 only. That red box there is identifying those questions that are only fulfilling the federal requirement. The yellow box is going to work to fulfill both federal and state requirement. We're going to use those items to match, to test the student for both requirements. And then we have 15 items that are grad only, this graduation test only. And those items are what we call foundational skills. And how are those developed? The same way we develop every test question, the same way we develop every set of test specifications. Minnesota teachers came in and said, this is what those foundational skills should be for high school graduation. Now, because we have this test doing two pieces of work, students are sitting down for one test administration instead of two. This is good news. I've got less to organize in my school. I've got less boxes to unpack, etc. Because of that, however, because we've got it doing more work, we need more test questions. And so we have field test questions. This last box has questions that won't count for the student, but we need to get them to generate future tests for retests and so on. And where that happens is if the student is not successful, here's what can happen. In the first administration, that box that covers over NCLB, if they're proficient, if they meet the standard, if Uncle Sam says for NCLB, you're proficient, then what we're proposing is, as it says in the current legislation, you're good to go. You're all set. If you aren't proficient based on the yellow and red boxes, then we're going to take another look at your score and say, how did you do on the green and yellow boxes? And if you get a passing score on that, and that is yet to be determined, again, the test doesn't actually legislatively exist at this time, but if you get a passing score on that, then you're good to go. And you only sat for one. You got two shots right there. We're not going to ask 11th graders or 10th graders to resit through an MCA2, so the plan is then to retest on computer right now, and there's reasons why, and I'll get into those in a bit, of why this retest is only is on computer for this part. We have other tests on computer. To be able to provide the common and the essentials, now essential questions, and that's 40 questions, and it's able to be taken on computer. They are not, as some have asked me, the exact same 40 questions that they just took a little while ago. So here's what we have and what's going to be proposed through some legislation from the department is that there would be three routes to graduation. And again, through testing, obviously the student has to fulfill other credit requirements, those of the district. But from a state standpoint of graduation testing, they would need to be proficient on the MCA2. They would either achieve the proficiency level of meets the standard or exceeds the standard for accountability. If they aren't on that, again, we go back to that smaller set of boxes. Then we just look at that grad component, those 40 questions, and say, are you proficient on that? And typically in how we do this in large-scale testing is we bring together, as we did for the MCA2s, a committee of stakeholders that includes administrators, superintendents, the bulk of it being teachers, and saying, what's good enough to say you passed? That's how it's determined. And it's a very formalized process called standard setting, and part of why I'll talk about why the scores were at the dates they were this past year. But that group would say this is good enough. Think of it equivalent to saying 75% as it is currently on the BST. It's a little more formal than that, the process, but that's essentially what would happen. That group would come together and say, is it 72.4 on this test and so on, and we go do some work in the background to make sure each test after that year is given at the same difficulty level as that particular test. And then finally, this rule is already in place with the BST, and we would certainly hope that it continue. Successful student performance for students with an IEP. Right now, IEP teams are able to gather and decide after watching student performance on the BST, they're able to say, you took the test three times, you're getting the same score, and 3M pulling a number out of the air, and say, that represents what we believe proficiency should be for you. You have an IEP, so you have the option to have what's called a pass individual, and that still would be available for students with special education or 504 plans, students with disabilities. And that has happened in the past since the BST was enacted, and certainly would not suggest removing that option. That little box that was down at the bottom there, we talked about grad retests, and this is what we plan to do. This is what we plan to do once these are up and running, and as they get up and running. So the first time next year, if a student did not pass or demonstrate proficiency on the MCA2s in reading, our plan is that early on in the summer and then roughly 6 to 8 weeks later, they would have an opportunity to retest. Here's the difference. I've heard a lot of people have called and said, boy, that math test is in 11th grade and they have, what, one more year to retest? They get one more try? That's not fair. And I would absolutely agree with you. That's not fair. Here's a solution that we are proposing, and we are working right now with our contractor to begin that as we pull these things together. It will be computer-based. It would be available every 6 to 8 weeks, basically on demand. Therefore, there would no longer be, this is the BST testing day, here you are. When I'm ready and I've done the remediation because I didn't do well on percentages, I go back and study percentages, and when I'm ready to take the test, I show up on the Saturday and take the computerized test at the school or whatever day the school sets up, or go to another school. I don't have to do it at my school district. I log in, show appropriate identification, I'm on my way. Think of it like some of the ability tests that are out there as far as college entrance and so on. The purpose why we were suggesting that it would be a six-week break, for example, is so that it doesn't become essentially Nintendo, that I didn't pass yesterday, I'm coming back tomorrow and starting to click away. There's a forced remediation period where you have to go back and work with those skills addressed specifically for remediation. And the reports would demonstrate that, as they currently do now on the BST. They tell you, here are the areas you're weak in. So the retest, I don't have to wait. And we have this question all the time. It's one of my favorite, probably the biggest thing for us in our division is the testing calendar, which never satisfies any of the school districts, and I recognize that, and it's a great challenge because we are going to hit somebody's spring break and somebody's et cetera, and you can imagine with over 400 independent school districts. But this would be essentially on demand. There is no more, this is the day. The day is when you need the day after an appropriate amount of time. And then we are able to provide quick results. I'm going to be careful about using the word immediate results because I don't want to suggest that this is going to work essentially like Wells Fargo, and you say, there's my deposit transfer, here you go, I'm all set. This is a high-stakes test that requires human eyes to verify the computer did what it did right. Now, when I say quick results, I'm talking 2 to 3 days, if that. And we might be able to put up a preliminary score. But immediate results in a high-stakes testing situation are very important that those results are verified. And so we would have essentially a process and a protocol for verifying that the computer captured correctly, that what happened to the first 10 questions, there's no responses, et cetera. We need to make sure that the technology does not fail. And that doesn't mean we have faulty technology. That just means sometimes I got to call Wells Fargo and say, what happened to my transfer from 3 days ago? I don't see it there. Here are some optional assessments. 3 out of the 4 on this sheet are optional assessments that are going on right now in Minnesota. Minnesota writes, this is kind of a vestige of the old MCA ones, if you will. It used to be a writing test in 5th grade. It came online. There was some talk about it maybe being used for No Child Left Behind. Now we just use math and reading. We have no plans to, this is an optional test. In fact, we are considering eliminating the main administration of this to reduce the testing. It's as much work. Maybe not as much. It's a great deal of work and resource in our division to present this test. But there is a way to use for a low-stakes test, to use an on-demand test where I write in my answers, and this wouldn't necessarily be just for 6th grade if we can use the technology. When the teacher wants, they could go down and a computer could score that. And the technology is sufficient enough that a computer in that situation is as effective as humans is what we're finding. So what we would do is be able to provide that for on-demand diagnostic purposes in writing. It's not required by state statute. It's not required by federal statute. It's just kind of a holdover. And if you mention just eliminating it, you'll hear from certainly one particular group. The next test that's optional in 2005, the legislature passed a program called the EPAS system, Educational Planning Assessment System. That is that there is, these tests are designed to, these are developed by ACT. These tests are developed to determine your on-track proficiency for college placement. So the 8th grade test is called Explore, and that predicts what your score is going to be in 10th grade if you continue taking appropriate coursework. The 10th grade test is called the Plan. And that test predicts, or gives a forecast, if you will, of what your ACT score would be if you take that. And that ACT is not part of the state's funding package. Students select that test on their own, but then they have an idea of that. Part of the purpose of this is twofold. For an 8th grader, if I take it and I'm going to college because my brothers and sisters went to college and I'm all set, but I don't score too well on that, that might give me an indication better, you know, maybe kind of readdress what you're looking at as far as courses you're taking or emphasis that you're putting in there. On the other hand, if a student who's, I'm not going to college, I'm not going to do it, my family's never gone to college, but doggone, I did pretty well on this test, it might give me a second thought about maybe I might consider looking at that. That's one of the options. Certainly it gives you some more information as you move through about how you'll do moving into college. You heard last night that there was some mention of the NAEP test, the National Assessment of Educational Progress. This is what's commonly referred to as the nation's report card. States, districts, schools, if selected for this test, not every district takes this, not every school takes this by any means, but if selected, in order, the federal legislation says that if selected, you must participate, and that is a test that they're required to take. It's a sampled test. It's not even all students in that school. The TIMSS study is one that was enacted last year in the 2006 legislature, the Trends in International Mathematics and Science Study. Every four years, there is an international study, and our country always participates in this, and they get samplings from our state. And so maybe there would be two, three schools from our state along with two, three schools from another, and they do some sampling and find out how Americans are measuring up across international studies. The legislature and in partnership with business community last year enacted legislation to participate in this TIMSS study as our own nation. That is, Minnesota is participating as if we are a nation against all the other countries. If I have correct, I believe Massachusetts is also one of the only other states this time around that's participating in this. Now, this test is optional, and I will give you fair warning that it is a great challenge, and I can't sit here and say I'm doggone shocked that we're offering another test and people are just not jumping out of trees to take this test. It is a sampled test, so we have to have specific schools. It's not just a volunteer test. We need a certain random stratified sample and all that measurement stuff we all did in stats somewhere. We have to have approximately 100 schools participate. We are at about a quarter of getting participation, and the deadline is the end of this month. And I, quite frankly, am a little anxious about our ability to do that. And the sole reason is schools that are being identified, and again, I cast no stones here because I've been in the chair where people have come and said, would you participate in one more study? But we have 25% of the schools that were selected in the sample have agreed. We're down to our second tier, we're down to our third tier, and we're now starting to begin looking at eliminating schools from reducing our sample size, which will give us less reliable information from a testing standpoint. So I have nothing to call them and say, you know, you really ought to do this. The commissioner has been very active in promoting this with superintendents and so forth. But again, I think that's also a nature of the beast of the job I get to work in, too, is, again, it's not necessarily the greatest of volunteer activities. So we're a little concerned about this. I have a call from the director of this, no less, out in I believe he's in Massachusetts, saying, call me immediately. I have some concerns. And I too, have those same concerns. Well, that's what we have for Minnesota in 2007. I want to take you through very briefly how a test is made, give you some testing options, and then tell you what some of our plans are. How are state tests built? They're built over 2 years. It is like turning a battleship because we are 2 years out right now building the next test. The test that there are students that are going to be taking questions that won't count for them. It's a process called field testing, some particular items, not a lot, in this year's 2007 test. They will not be used on a test to count for students until 2009. Oh, my goodness, that's so much time. You must be drinking too much coffee. And no. What it is a very precise process, an industry standard process of making sure that the tests are aligned to state standards and are of high quality. This process that's diagrammed up here is, as I say, an industry standard. 40 other states that give their own custom-built tests use a process similar to this. What happens is that when the standards are changed, as they were for the Minnesota academic standards, we have to write test specifications. We have to say, okay, you wrote the standards. Now in that blue box on top, how are we going to test that? Are we going to ask questions that have 4 digits because you didn't say in the standard? Are you going to have 2 digits? Very specific, and they're intended for item test question writers to know exactly how we want in Minnesota our questions written. The green boxes that are up there in the next two rows are all groups of teachers coming together. We have over 2,000 teachers in a database that come together and review every test question, review every passage, review every piece of data before it ever counts for a Minnesota student. And so first of all, I'll take you through a reading test. A past storyboard is about science, but Minnesota teachers come together, third grade teachers, and look at the passages we're going to use on the third grade test, and they say, no, that third graders wouldn't like that. We hopefully try and call that into a very good list that then they take a look at. But then they give advice on whether that passage should be on there. And I get at least one call a year that says, you know, Mattson, that passage that was on that grade 5 test, that was the stupidest passage there could be. It's not worth even kids' time reading it. I don't know how you could even pick that passage, etc. And we have a short conversation about test security, and then we actually move into talking about, well, I can tell you who picked that passage. Might be the teacher that was right down the door from you. And Minnesota teachers are the ones picking that passage. And I say that with all good love to the fine 2,000 teachers that are serving on our committees. We have another group of folks, some of them teachers, but some of them community members, that come in and review the passages, just the passages or these storyboards that we use in science, for bias. Is this bias towards a certain ethnic group? Is this bias towards a certain socioeconomic status? Are we asking a passage about golfing vacations in Hawaii that a student might not have had the opportunity to even understand some of the background knowledge? And we have that bias group make sure we do that correctly. We bring Minnesota teachers in again to review all of the test questions, that new item review, to say, does this question, is this appropriate for a fifth grader? Is it aligned to the standards? Is there anything that's tricky about this question? Have we misled the student at all? And we move on with that. We do that bias review again for items. We test those questions out in a process called field testing. And we sprinkle them into the test. The students don't know which ones. We do something called range finding, because on our state tests, according to Minnesota statute, we're required to give constructed response questions. I'll show that in just a moment. But Minnesota teachers come in and help us determine what should get a 4 point on a response that students explain, what should get 3 points, what should get 2, what should get a 1. And Minnesota teachers develop that and help us develop that. We have all kinds of psychometric stuff that goes on, measurement theory to make sure everything matches up. Minnesota teachers come in and look at how the questions performed. And they will determine, you know, that question, we thought it was good, but after kids tried it out, doesn't count for their test, it didn't work the way we wanted to. The data doesn't show us that it worked right. We're tossing that question. And at that point, we'll get rid of the question. We build the operational test, the test that counts for students. We give the operational test in the gold box. We have some scoring, scaling, the equating, and all of these fun psychometric activities that go on in the background. And then we also have to do, when standards are new, we have to set achievement levels. This is why the results did not come out until later, because there is a formal process of determining, we've scored the test, but now how much do you want to say is proficient? How much of the test do you want to say that student knows the standards? And that process is a formal process that can't happen until students take the test. And this is a common misnomer in large-scale testing. It isn't like your 10th grade English teacher who gave you the test and said, we're going to just say 90, 80, 70, 60, and that's it, and you're all set, and whatever you get, good to go. What happens is we bring stakeholders together, because we don't know. The nice thing about that 10th grade English teacher is they have the opportunity to say, you know what, I didn't realize that question number 6 was a bad question. You know what, everybody, I'm going to throw that question off. I'll give you that point, et cetera. We don't have that luxury in large-scale testing. So you set the standard after we have the data and see how the test performed. And Minnesota teachers, as you've seen in the results that were released in November, Minnesota teachers recommended those scores. The commissioner finally approved those cut scores of saying this is proficient with very little, only very slight psychometric recommendations from the department. I was asked to bring in some questions. I'll go through these rather quickly. We won't spend a lot of time on them. This is a grade 3 mathematics question that happens to show up. It's a sample of one that's dealing with patterns. You can see it there. If I study that for a while, I'll be able to tell you the right answer is A.
Each member got that correct.
Very good. I'll take on to another pattern type of question for grade 5. I'll be very quick about these, that the answer is B. They were able to tell how much is 1 year. And again, this is the thing that Minnesota teachers will look at and align that back. An eighth grade question having to do with the equation and a graph. And then finally, a 10th grade question that deals with how high that particular ball reaches, a very much more sophisticated question, 11th grade question, excuse me if I may have said 10th. We have another type of question that's on our test that deals with, here's one that the teachers really enjoy and the students do not, which is that we don't give an A, B, C, or D answer. The answer to this question is 65, and the student has to bubble in 6-5. So the guess factor reduces considerably. Last night, you heard from some other stakeholders, and I'll go through these rather briefly. I think I hit four of the five top questions in preparation for this. Why can't we just use NWA for the state tests? Why can't the results be returned sooner? Why can't the results give more information about kids? Put them all on computer, and you got too many tests. And other than that, I have a pretty light day. These are the standards that, again, from NCLB, we have to give the same test to every student. We're required to do that. And there are ways to do that. The difference between formative assessment and summative assessment that we build in the MCA2s is a summative assessment. It is an end-of-the-year check for the school district. How did they do? The formative assessment, as you see kind of the quote there from an author, is kind of like the cook in the kitchen tasting it. The formative assessment is intended to give you some insight on how to adjust your instruction. What does that mean for states? We have to ask kids all the same core test questions. All items have to have a one-to-one match of alignment. We can't just say, well, that question's kind of close to this standard. It has to be exact. We can't use, let me just very simply say, quickly say, we can't use the publisher's literature. There are some tests where you could ask the questions of all the same kids and then move on and ask the questions that come from the publisher, and that's called an augmented test or an adaptive test. I'll just point out very quickly that this particular researcher found that publishers will say that their tests are aligned. They're aligned to at least 85%, and we'll fill in the gaps for you. Independent group has found that those tests typically are no more than 50% aligned, and that means then teachers don't know exactly what's on the test. Minnesota, as I mentioned, along with 40 other states, or 39 other states, then are doing custom-built criterion reference tests. Whether you like them or not, that gives me some clue to what all other states are doing as far as their import. Idaho, you will often hear, is the seminal that they have the MAP test. They use the NWA for their state test. We should use that, etc. I am not against the NWA. I was the one that brought it into a particular district as a test director. They did, when using it for their state test, had issues with content validity. They were rejected summarily by the federal government for their accountability test. They moved to a new vendor, and now they have full approval. Also, a little-known fact about that Idaho test is that they are not allowed to use the adaptive capabilities of that in the spring. I'll move through some of the board findings that found that they needed to basically, in essence, and this I provided the citation for you, move all of the problems that they had with that test in making it the state accountability test. I've commonly said to people, you don't want me to have control of that test at the state level. You don't want me to have that. Want the state to have it. Districts would lose control of when they tested. Districts would lose control of the testing calendar because we, as an accountability test, have to have a specific testing calendar so that the opportunity to learn is equal. Adaptive tests are not fully adaptive for state-level accountability tests, and we would have to develop other items. The test would be longer. Minnesota wouldn't own the items. We wouldn't be able to show folks what's on the test. Students cannot go back and review their answers in adaptive tests, I'd also like to mention. So again, it is a wonderful test. For a formative process, it has some hurdles to jump over as a summative assessment. What Minnesota, the MDE is proposing to do is to provide a voluntary formative assessment to schools given on computer and mathematics and reading, make sure that it aligns to our state standards, and give schools control of that. And you'll see proposals that's in the governor's recommendation as well. Why can't we get the results back sooner? Quality controls are the issue. They're used throughout the process. We have a three-way match of every single step we do because the stakes are so high, and we try to make sure that. The other issue with results sooner, we are required by statute to include constructed response items, those items that students explain their answer. And this is an example of a constructed response, and this is an example, and I know you can't read it, of what the student has to do to explain that. You can't get that off of a multiple choice question. We know that results will be much earlier this summer because the standard setting has been completed. However, we may need to do it again in 2011 if and when we go to the MCA3s. Why can't the results give more specific information? The amount of specific information depends on how many questions you ask. If I ask two questions about percentage to you, I can't walk away and say, you've got it. More questions, we can get more information. Fewer questions, we can't get as much information. So we either have to have a very long test or not get a lot of information, and we try and draw a balance in how we do it. And we do report out at the strand level, but to get more detailed information, they need formative assessment. Why can't we put it all on computer is another question. Constructed responses that I showed you need human scoring. You can't send that through a computer. The schools have identified technology issues with us. We have security and preparation issues, the labs, instructional time, et cetera. And we can't necessarily, for reasons I could explain later, it's very challenging to create both a paper for those that want to do paper and a computer for those that want to do computer. We had an online initiative that did a report. They identified several findings, and I won't go into all of those, but they identified several concerns. This was a group of district-level and teachers, administrators, IT folks. We are moving some tests to computer, and we will move others to computer, but only when it's ready. To move to computer without taking advantage of technology is not, and in how we assess kids, is not an appropriate thing to do. How come there are so many tests? There are a lot of tests because there are a lot of tests customized to certain populations, and that's what we do. We try. There's a special education test that's available. We do that. English language learners, we create that. The MCA2s take less than 1% of the instructional time of the instructional school year. They take about 3 to 4 hours per subject, and it's not 1 3- to 4-hour sitting. It takes less than, takes about 8 hours in 180 school days out of 6 years, and I'm being, I'm trying to be liberal with numbers so that the benefit of the doubt, even if you reduce those numbers. You hear a lot about teaching to the test. If the standards are aligned and the test is aligned to the standards, you are not teaching to the test, you are teaching the standards. And so there is not an intent to have this, you don't stop your curriculum, teach what's on the test, and go back to your curriculum. Your curriculum is aligned to those standards. I'll leave you with these few things, and I'm going to let Ms. Wagner continue, and I apologize if I've extended my time. This is what we do. I tell folks all the time, we do not sit and twirl our mustaches and think about new tests to give and look with glee. I work with some very passionate educators in that division. I'm very pleased to be doing so. We can make improvements just as schools are asked to make improvements, and we plan on doing so. Right now, I've talked to you about the summative assessments, but we are working and are recommending the governor's recommendations for computer-based formative assessments that can inform that. We're trying to extend the helps we can give. That would be voluntary. And then we're also looking at trying to provide a toolbox for research-based instructional strategies as well. So all those things will line up there. Let me quickly get out of the way and allow Ms. Wagner, unless I can answer any questions quickly.
Thank you very much, Dr. Mattson. We're going to hold on questions at this point, and we could go to Ms. Wagner.
Good afternoon. I'm Kathy Wagner. I'm the director of the Information Technology Department at the department, and I'm going to go real quickly over some highlights of the report card. You have a copy of the presentation, and I think you also have a color copy of the actual school report cards. Yep. So, okay, just a couple quick facts here about report cards in 06. This past year, we have about 2,023 total schools for the last school year. Of those schools, 1,576 had at least 3 stars in reading or math. So we have a pretty high rate of awarding stars in reading and mathematics. 1,300 of those were in math, and another 1,400 were in reading. The report card actually has been around for several years, and it's in response to legislation, MS-120B, and all of the components of the report card actually are directed from the legislation. So we have objective criteria based on levels of student performance, 4 to 6 performance designations, those are the stars. Identification of high and low performing schools, again, that would be the stars. And the report card has more information than just adequate yearly progress and test information. We give actually 2 other star ratings. We give star ratings on academic performance or exceptional academic opportunities and on school safety. A couple other legislative requirements, annual updates posted to the web, and have these available at the beginning of the school year. So the report card was initially created with pretty broad-based input from a variety of professional organizations and a variety of school districts, and we have updated the report card every year to respond to changing tests and changing policies and changing programs at the department. The report card has seven sections, one on student information, a section on STARS for the MCA2s, advanced academic opportunities and school safety. There are also MCA2 scores, adequate yearly progress results, various school opportunities are highlighted, school and district staffing information, and a report to taxpayers. So we've tried to cover a lot of the key data components that build in some of that background context that Dirk was referring to. Academic STARS. This is probably the biggest part of the report card that people talk about. How do you get STARS? You get one star if you've been having trouble in AYP, inadequate yearly progress, for two or more years. You get two stars if you're currently having trouble with AYP. Schools that are making adequate yearly progress automatically get three stars. That's where we get the 1,500 schools with three or more stars. Those schools have an opportunity to get additional stars either by showing high performance at the school or by showing high performance when compared to similar schools. So there are actually seven opportunities to get stars, but we only award five. So the additional stars, if you're making adequate yearly progress, if you have 10% or fewer students that are not meeting expectations on the MCA2s, your school can get an additional star. Or if you have very high-performing students at your school, 30% or more of students exceeding expectations on the MCA2s, you can get an additional star. Other schools benefit from a comparison to like schools. So we have two ways to compare schools. We compare schools to other schools with similar numbers of free and reduced price lunch. That's our poverty indicator in this state. Or we compare schools to similar numbers of enrollment. And I think that one's critical when you get into greater Minnesota where you have some real differences in school sizes. The data for the school report card comes from several of the state's main data systems. Of course, the MCA2s, the AYP, also MARS, which is our enrollment collection, STAR, which is our teacher collection, and our financial data collections, which are UFARs. Schools also provide quite a bit of additional information about opportunities offered at their site, and we ask every year 10 to 17 questions. They're yes-no questions. Sometimes if schools forget to go in and do those, they can go in anytime, put the data in, and we refresh these overnight. So it's we're very responsive to schools supplying us data. Report card information, a couple references. You can't read them here, but I gave you the URL to get into the background data about the school report cards. If you want to just follow the navigation in, that's the second bullet. Our entire website, our school report card website, has a couple features. The one that you have is an example of the PDF that you can get on the site, but we also have an interactive section of the site where you can compare schools to other schools based on a whole variety of demographic variables, ethnic variables. You can pick your test. You can pick your score type. So lots of opportunity for what we call slice and dice of data. And I think I'm out of time, so I'm not going to go over the report card.
We will have a chance for additional dialogue. Dr. Mattson had some recommendations in his presentation, and Ms. Wagner, did you have any recommendations from the department on the current report card program?
On the piece that we are not addressing with the legislation currently, because we haven't had the testing program yet to support it, is the growth component. So as soon as the testing component, as soon as the assessment department gets the growth component underway, then we'll be reflecting that in the school report card to comply with the legislation.
Okay. We thank you for each of your very helpful presentations. The handouts were excellent. We will have a chance to visit more and have dialogue with you and our next panel. So if we could ask the following, Jan Alswager, Mary Ciccone, Dave Jennings, Charlie Kite, Jim Bartholomew, to approach, and we'll start with Mary Ciccone from Parents United, and each will give a presentation, and we'll have a chance with dialogue with the Department of Education as well on concerns, suggestions as well. We welcome each of you to the committee.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members. Parents United believes in data-driven decisions, whether those decisions are meant to increase student achievement at a school level or by decision makers to determine policy. But good decisions have to be made using usable data. And I would argue that the data that we're collecting today in its present form is not usable for parents, students, or teachers. Those of you who were able to make the off-site visit last night in South Washington found out that good testing is timely. It informs daily instruction. It informs curricular decisions, motivates students, predicts outcomes, and ultimately increases student achievement. Honestly, the MCA can't meet these measures. So in the present form, it is useless to us. The problem, as I see it, though, is the way the MCA data is used, the weight we give it. We use it to test schools, and then we report it out in box scores, not with the complexity it deserves. Those box scores are used to rate schools like we do restaurants and movies. Parents United has always disagreed with the star rating system because we believe that there's greater complexity to this issue and to how schools perform. You're talking about it. You just listened to a presentation that talked about that complexity. Imagine the parent sitting out, opening their paper, and seeing that their school is one star. Parents in Minnesota are very smart, and I've found that they're hungry for data, real data. We need the Minnesota Department of Education to speed progress toward growth scales and gain scores so that schools can truly be held accountable using trend data based in longitudinal studies, which is the authentic way to test a school. You've set the standards. Now collect the data on a trend basis so that it can be more authentic. Parents United also believes that accountability cuts both ways, and we believe that the legislature is accountable for providing the resources necessary for our schools to meet the standards that have been set by this body. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Allswiger.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jan Allswiger, Education Minnesota. I'm just going to first start out by asking you a question. What is the purpose of the test? Because if you want the purpose of your test to be rating and labeling kids, that's what we're doing right now. If you want the purpose of the test to give you information so that you can change instruction and improve student learning, we're not doing that now. That is more of a diagnostic test, and that you would have to get the information back early enough so that you can make the accommodations or the changes in instruction so that you can make that student learn by changing your instructional methods. Our members, our teachers, are very concerned right now that testing is taking over the rest of the curriculum so that teachers aren't really able to enrich curriculum or to encourage thinking and analysis. I have been all over the state, as I had recently told you. In every single location that I went to, which is almost 16 of them, what they said over and over again is that we are testing way too much. We are not able to teach all the things that the kids need. So as I said, this current testing is not giving us diagnostic information. It is merely a proficiency test. And you need to be careful about putting too much stake or too much stock into test results. When you are only giving one test, I'll give you an analogy. We all know the batting average. I'm not a big sports fan, sorry. Obviously. But think about it. If we rated a batter one time when he was at bat, would that be fair to him? And yet we are doing that with children on one day when who knows what happened in his or her home on the day that the test was taken. Who knows if that child was able to get breakfast that day? And yet we're making decisions about star ratings, about schools, with this one test. So we are concerned about this high-stakes nature of these tests. The other thing I will say is that the teachers that we talked to when we went around the state said that in times of budget cuts, the only courses that are safe from being cut are those that are tested, and that we are losing the breadth of the curriculum. They just feel there is too much testing. So what is a test measuring? The more you measure in a test, the less reliable it is and the less valid it is. And I'm not going to get into what reliable and valid means today. But I think you heard stated earlier that they need to, at times, add more information to the test. You just need to know you're not getting the accurate information if you continue to add more things to the test. Recently, a teacher called me and he said, you know, look at those math, you know, the MCA2 test scores in math. And he was just very upset because he said, these are some very good math students and they have been labeled not proficient. Well, what you need to know is that when you change the standards or you change the proficiency level, you have now made some changes and there's a lag time and it takes time to catch up to the changes that you have made. And he said, my math students, and I'm not exactly, it must have been the 11th grade, took one of the students took this test and was labeled not proficient. And he said, and the student got a 23 on the math portion of the ACT, which is a score that is high enough to go into college. We also have, as I stated a little bit, that we have concerns about the high-stakes testing. There's just too much online for a single test. We do support growth models and encourage more work in that area. Teachers do take tests very seriously. We think that there's a lot of value in tests, but diagnostic tests will actually move your students farther academically than the current tests that we have right now. And I don't think I'll take the time to read this to you now, but it is very valuable because I know you've got other people to speak. This was done about 5 years ago. It's a booklet called Building Tests to Support Instruction and Accountability, which is exactly what you're talking about. And it was prepared by a group of education groups, the school administrators, elementary principals, secondary principals, the National Education Association, and the National Middle School Association at the national level. And they have 9 recommendations for building tests to support instruction and accountability. Everything from professional development to what the tests needed to look like, how they had to be aligned to standards. And again, I won't go into all of those today, but probably some of the most valuable information that you could take away from this issue.
Thank you. Representative Superintendent Jennings.
Mr. Chairman, David Jennings, Superintendent of Schools for Independent School District 112, Eastern Carver County. First of all, thank you for inviting me today. I promise you that I will overcome my shyness and be happy to participate in the discussion that we have following this. But I thought for the committee's purposes, it might be useful today to hear from a professional from our district who is on the front line of trying to make the testing process work. And I'd like to introduce Kathy Gallagher. Dr. Gallagher is a principal on special assignment who is working with instructional leadership and testing for our district. And I had distributed, I believe, a copy of the state's testing calendar. I'm sure she's going to refer to that in her remarks.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you, Senator Wieger and senators, for allowing me to comment on the state's testing calendars today. First, let me say that in my role as coordinator of curriculum, that I'm committed to rigorous curricular options for students and to assessments that measure growth over time. Educators in my district and across Minnesota embrace high standards for all students. We know that assessment is absolutely critical to our role in raising student achievement for all students through effective instruction. I believe that as a tool to improve achievement, testing should reflect what we know to be best practices. It should never be a game and should never be used to humiliate or punish. In front of you is the state's most recent testing calendar for the 2006-2007 school year. I share it with you today because I believe we can do much better for our students. teachers, parents, and citizens of Minnesota. I want to point out to you today is the challenge school districts face in trying to comply with the calendar. First, you'll see that the schedule's in color. It's really the only way to track the state testing schedule is to color code the tests. However, if the testing schedule came to us in July and we had the confidence that it would remain as our guide for the upcoming testing year, I wouldn't be here to talk to you about it. I'm here because this is the fifth version, at least, in the schedule that the state has sent to us since July 26th. What does it mean to a school district when testing schedules change? Each of these five changes has costs in terms of time and money. Here's an example beginning in July. We received a testing calendar on July 26th. In my district, we immediately met with principals to share the schedule and to ensure no conflicts would occur. On July 31st, we were notified that the calendar would be changing to include an additional date to retake the BST reading test in September. The change was necessary because the state had not noticed that questions from its sample tests were also on the actual test. Answers to these questions on the July BST reading test could not be counted. Students who did not pass the test would now be given an additional chance to take it again. That change required that we notify students of the retest. The letter was then translated into several languages and mailed first class. The letter prompted questions about the situations from parents and students that required time and attention. In some cases, interpreters were contracted to call parents. A second meeting with staff was required to plan for the additional retest. Each of these steps required time and money that could have been better spent. Multiply this by more than 300 school districts. In early November, the Department of Education announced another change. The test of emerging academic English could no longer be substituted for the MCA 2 reading test for English language learners. The state moved the test from late April to March to coincide with the TEALS, a language test for these same language learners. That wasn't the only change. In addition, the state informed us that it would no longer accept an alternate assessment to the MCA 2s for severely cognitively impaired special education students. These students would have to take a one-on-one test called the MTEST. This test is aligned to grade-level state standards and requires students to show proficiency even though they may not be able to read or speak. Even now, that test is not ready, even though it's on the test calendar and will require extensive IEP manager time and training. On November 22nd, another calendar, we learned that the testing calendar had been changed once again since the state was no longer developing an online BST test. In December, a new schedule shows that the TEALS test now is not on the calendar for March. The problem is that many districts do not have the capacity or infrastructure or computer hardware to test their English language learners within the window the state requires. This is news to no one. Districts clearly communicated that last year, but were ignored. We need more thoughtful test schedule development. One of the calendars for 07-08 had the BST retest occurring on Thanksgiving. Before or after dinner, I wondered. Next year, ELL learners can have three state tests in the month of March, the T, the TEALS, and a field test for T2. And now, what for me is the final straw, the state will be anointing gold standard and bronze standard school districts based on one criterion. Do you have enough computers to be able to test all of your students within the MDE test window? In other words, if you have few students and lots of technology, you can be a gold standard school district. If you have lots of students and or do not have enough computers to get everyone through the test in the allotted time, you are relegated to a bronze school district. Note that these designations have nothing at all to do with the knowledge students demonstrate on the tests. The state's testing schedule is the driver. Please, this is not how education should be. In Minnesota, 331 school districts, charter schools, and private schools use NWEA MAP testing to measure the knowledge growth of their students in addition to state testing. Why? Because they can get meaningful information in the hands of their teachers the next day. This state is the greatest NWEA user in the country. There is a message. Teachers and administrators want sound data that can be used to improve teaching and learning. NWEA testing is helpful. We have to seriously look at what we are doing with assessment. Do districts have the capacity to administer computerized assessments? If not, what will be done to assist them in acquiring resources, not ridicule them? Are the assessments developed, tested, and ready to be implemented so that calendars are realistic, set in advance in a timely manner, so that time and money is not wasted with repeated changes and rescheduling? Are we assured that our contracted testing providers use the quality controls necessary to fix the problems with answer sheets, tests with inappropriate questions, and confusion of mismarked return documents? Do some of our students have enough time to learn? How much instructional time is being absorbed in multiple assessments, and are they all necessary? If the goal is improved achievement, how do we reconcile 4-month delays and results to schools? Are we as a state willing to stand for resources for improved learning environments for children and to stand and be counted against bureaucracies wasting valuable resources that would be better spent in other ways? There are improvements to be made. There are questions to be answered. Please be responsive to the need. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Gallagher. Charlie Kite.
Charlie Kite, Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators, and frankly, I don't really want to follow that testimony. One of the things that a lot of folks think is that our particular association represents only the school superintendents in the state of Minnesota. Indeed, we also represent about 100 of the curriculum directors from most of the districts that are large enough to have curriculum directors. Many of those folks have responsibility all around this whole testing and assessment piece. So I have the good fortune, maybe the bad fortune, of meeting with a lot of people like Kathy from time to time as they kind of tell me and share some of the stories of some of the things that are challenging. I would like to just take a minute or two to make a few observations from, not from 10,000 feet, but maybe from 2,000 feet up, and then just pose a couple of cost-benefit questions for you. And I don't come here with any particular recommendations of how to solve any of this. But here's a few observations. A couple of them just are based in understanding our history. Minnesota was well on the way to building an accountability and testing system prior to the federal government passing the No Child Left Behind Act. And in fact, I would even make an argument that Minnesota's system was to some degree both derailed and redirected because of the federal rules that came down to us. Second observation, a little bit more on a different tact. As a nation and as a state, we actually have less accountability on the individuals who are responsible for learning than almost any other of the developed nations in the world. We have more accountability on the institutions that are charged with providing the education, but very little individual accountability. As a consequence, one of the things that we are running up against constantly is that the individuals who in other countries take all of the accountability measurements very, very serious because they are their pathway to the future. Our students take these accountability measures with a casualness because they don't have a lot of consequence to them. Now, we do have a few tests that have some consequence, but even the consequences in our system are minor compared to what we see in a number of the other nations. I'm not bringing that to you as a recommendation that they're right and we're wrong. It's only that it's different, but it also comes into play when sometimes we get frustrated when students are not taking the tests with all the skill that they could muster. Third observation is that there are really, as Kathy just mentioned, there are two systems of large-scale testing now prevalent in Minnesota. The first one is the state testing system, which mostly would be called now the MCA2s. The second system that is out there is the system that the school districts are buying themselves, and that's the NWEA test, Northwest Achievement test, sometimes called the MAP test. They're referred to as the MAP test when they're more in an online computerized environment. These tests have very different purposes, and they have different approaches. There has always been interest on the part of the schools finding some way of using the NWEA tests to kind of solve all of the accountability measures. But I will share with you that even if we attempted to do that, the federal government would most likely not approve, or they would put up many, many, many roadblocks in front of us. In fact, the single state that has attempted to do this and is being at least partially successful is Idaho. I've been here testifying in past years about that, but the reality is by the time Idaho goes over all the jumps of the federal government, the testing that they love so much doesn't look quite as good as it started out to look. Secondly, in terms of the NWEA tests, many of our districts and many of our teachers and administrators, because they like the way the NWEAs work and how they give quick turnaround and accountability, also are very leery of having that system be turned into the state accountability system, which is much more burdensome because it has to be done on a much larger scale, on a much more rigid kind of a time frame. So while we have another test that school people always talk about as being desirable, it is not easily applied to be the state test. And the tests are, I guess I'm saying is the tests are very different. They have different purposes. And doing some kind of a hybrid, a single hybrid, will prove to be elusive. Next to the last observation that I would make is that the federal rules regarding accountability testing are very confining and difficult for both the states and for the schools. And they also tend to be quite punitive in their approach. So a lot of the frustration that you hear from the schools, I suspect, would be frustrations if it would be said publicly coming from the state level as well, because it is difficult to meet all the criteria that are being put in front of us. The last observation that I would make was one that I think was even referenced by Dirk Mattson earlier. I just have to tell you, across the state, from what I can see and what I hear, is that the school folks are really burning out on the testing, and I have to tell you that the students are burning out on it as well. One of the reasons you're having a hard time getting schools to volunteer to participate in the national test of education progress is they're kind of saying to you and us, we're up to here, and we just are not going to go any further on a voluntary basis. So that's kind of identifying the fact that we're close to the edge. So now just let me shift my testimony just very quickly and just talk on a cost-benefit basis. When we think of cost-benefit, I would like to remind us all that cost is not only money, but it is also time, and it is also energy, all three of which you have a defined amount of, and you can't just create more of it easily. So as we do the testing, we always have to think, how much time is it taking, how much money is it taking, how much energy is it burning up, and in return, what benefit are we getting? And I'm not going to share my observation or answer there, but I think the questions that people in a governing position want to ask is, what does the state testing system, MCA2s and so forth, what does it actually cost annually in terms of money, time, and energy? The second question that should be asked is, who is paying? Is it the federal government paying? Is it the state government paying? Is it the local government paying? And when you think of time and energy, you have to ask this question. Who else is paying? Is it the teachers that are paying? Is it the children that are paying? Is it lost opportunity that's being paid in return for taking the test? And then I would ask the second question on a cost-benefit basis, and that would kind of lean us towards the efficiency issues. What are the things that can be done that can help to make this process more efficient? so that it works better for everybody involved. And again, you can look at those through the lens of money, time, and energy. I thought for a long time that we should be moving our systems as quickly as possible towards a computerized basis for testing. And I thought that because I thought we could save an immense amount of time and we could get results back so much quicker. But as the schools have reflected on that, you come up against some huge challenges of energy and money. So you know that it's kind of a yin and a yang here that happens. So those are some questions that I would think that governing bodies would really want to ask and try to get solid questions to as you make the decisions about how much benefit are you getting for what cost. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And if I could ask Dr. Mattson, if you we're going to hear from Jim Bartholomew, but if Dr. Mattson, if you could pull up a chair between Ms. Coney and Ms. Allswager, and you'll have a chance to provide some reaction, and then we'll ask the panelists to talk. Mr. Bartholomew. Senator Lynch.
Chair, will members of the committee have an opportunity at some point to ask questions
yes.
of this distinguished panel?
Yes. Mr. Bartholomew.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to visit with you today on this topic. And I appreciated Mr. Kite's analogy of going from 10,000 to 2,000 feet, because I'd like to try to pull this back up to 30,000 feet if I could. And just kind of talk about why we do what we're doing right now. And we understand, with the business partnership, and we understand their issues with the federal No Child Left Behind Act.
Can you just pull the mic closer?
Sure. Okay. Thanks. Thought I had it after last time, but thanks. We understand their issues with NCLB. We understand their issues with the department getting the test results to districts back in a more timely fashion. We understand their issues with the state's report card, as well as the ever-changing testing calendar. But in a way, some of these issues take away the focus for why we have statewide testing. Minnesota, beginning in the late 1980s, began to move to a standards-based system for public education. The core of this policy was to describe the knowledge and skills students need to know and be able to do to be adequately prepared for life after high school graduation. Moving to a standards-based education system has not only helped Minnesota articulate what our expectations are for students, but it also says implicitly that all students, with very few exceptions, will get to a certain level of academic proficiency. Having state standards, which are frequently supplemented by local school district expectations, has been a critical step toward helping Minnesota communicate with parents, students, teachers, and the public about where our students need to be when they graduate. As we implemented the statewide standards, Minnesota also began to develop and use state assessments which were directly linked to those standards. This is where our kids need to be, and we need to measure their progress towards those expectations. The fundamental reason for doing this was to provide a feedback mechanism for communicating how well our students and their schools were progressing towards the expectations that we've all laid out. Some of the benefits for establishing state standards and the corresponding assessments linked to those standards include, again, articulating our academic expectations for all students. A second benefit is we are able to measure progress, again, of all students as the collective, but also by demographic categories. Again, I know there are issues with No Child Left Behind, but the fundamental issue there is we can't afford to focus on the average or focus on the best performing kids. We also have to pay attention to all kids, some of whom have not always had the best experience in our educational system. And that's not a negative comment, it's just a comment that it's identified an area of need that we need to focus on and try to improve upon, which is closely linked to my third point. One, by having a uniform statewide assessment linked to our common standards, we're able to identify successes and areas where additional help is needed. It lets us know on a uniform basis where to look for best practices and where to go to try and infuse those best practices or help others look at those and try to improve. And I guess finally I would argue that by moving to a standards-based system with a statewide assessment, it allows you in particular, allows Minnesotans generally, but you as state policymakers, to focus on the most important thing, student results. How are our kids doing relative to where they need to be, as opposed to having to rely on regulating inputs into our educational system? Our hope in our support of state standards and assessments is the state would look at how are the kids doing and then correspondingly try not to tell educators at the local level how to do their job. It's, you know, we need to take advantage of their expertise. They're the ones closest to the kids, and no single answer is going to be the solution for all students. Having state standards with a corresponding assessment allows you to focus on the results and then ideally move to free up educators at the local level. And just in closing, after last night's hearing, which I thought was wonderful, and but it made me go back, having heard the comments that the MCA results were meaningless, didn't help any parents, didn't do anything to help the process. And we've got a couple kids in the system, and we've received both null results from our district, NWEA, as well as the MCAs. And our daughter, I was able to find the results for both of them for our daughter when she was in the seventh grade, and I promised not to pass this out. I promised her I wouldn't pass it out, but it's her results on the MCAs. And frankly, there's a lot to know and learn about in the document we received from our school district. It told us how she was doing in five different areas for reading and six different areas for math. It told us points possible, points earned, the state average. It talked about how well did Sarah do compared with Minnesota students, and it does percentile rankings, both for reading and math. Talks about what a scale score is, what's an achievement level. And then it shows you the levels at the bottom for both reading and for math and where she is with an explanation of what each level means she can or can't do and the range, because as Dr. Mattson mentioned, it can't give you a pinpoint, but it can give you a range of where your child is. The back of the document was wonderful. It, again, gave a full explanation of what each of the achievement levels represented, as well as sample questions from each of the reading and math assessments. And if I really wanted to do more, I could go to the department's website, and they have an abundance of information about the MCAs there as well. So I totally respect the comments made by others, but I think to say that the MCA results and what parents get back from that is meaningless and useless, I guess I'd like to work off of this in that conversation and see why that isn't helpful.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bartholomew. And Dr. Mattson, a brief response to some of the comments. And committee members, we will have a chance for questions in about 10 minutes.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think the points made here are very good. I think that my colleagues here at the table have made some very good points. We do not do everything necessarily perfect in that assessment system. We have some issues to correct. As I said, we're always involved in continuous improvement. I don't know if I'm going to address a specific concern. I guess one thing, the testing calendar was brought up, which grieves me greatly. When we have to make a change in that, majority, I believe, and I won't go back through the list of them, I would say a majority of those changes were made due to federal regulations that came down on us at a very late time frame. I would love to say, you know what, we're going to just thumb our nose at the federal government and say, to heck with it, we're doing it our way. And I would love to leave that calendar as is. and we do it with input from school districts. We create that calendar with input from school districts. We call out to every single school district and say, please come and help us build the test calendar that we have constraints that we have to do. You have constraints on yours. Please come. Last time we had three people show up. There is no doubt it's a very challenging thing to do, and part of why it is so color-coded is because we have all these special tests for special populations. We have special requirements for English language learners and so on. I don't disagree with my colleague here, and I am grieved at the number of changes that we had to make. It shouldn't be that way. And we should get information also. I'm not going to blame the federal government for it, but I will at least admit the fact of that. I think you've heard a lot about using data to drive instruction. Amen. Amen. Remember that the idea of the MCA2s, the state-level summative assessment, as Mr. Bartholomew has indicated, was to provide a system-level check on where students are or where schools are in relation to their instruction. It was not designed originally, and again, as I mentioned in my opening remarks, we are squeezing every piece of information we can get out of it. It was not designed to be the NWEA. It, in its current form, can't be the NWEA, and if we turn it into the NWEA, whether it's a good thing to do or a bad thing to do, or anyway, I think Mr. Kite is correct, Dr. Kite's correct, that Idaho, which has been cited as being a state that's used it, has had so many twists and turns to it that they can't essentially use it the way they want to use it. And that was kind of my comment, that you essentially don't want the state to have it. If I were still in a district, and I'm not, I wouldn't want the state to have it, because then the windows close and all the rest of it. We have a lot of challenges. We have special education students who have specialized testing. We have English language learners who have specialized testing. We have, for just a quick comment here, and then I'll stop. For special education students, they are included in the accountability system under the federal guidelines, under state guidelines. They're not allowed to be exempted. You can't just take a pass. They are required under IDEA to be included. In Minnesota, we had the MCA2s and we had an alternate assessment. The federal government said to us as late as this summer, you know what, your alternate assessment does not cut the mustard. You need to create a new one. That originally was developed by the department way back in 1998, well before my time and not even in the testing division. It now resides in the testing division. We are working very quickly to get it up and ready because they've essentially said you have one option, either the MCA2s or MCA2s with accommodations, or you can develop this very specialized test, which we call this, for this 1% of the population, this very small group. The federal guidelines are also, so in the language, we call it the 1% test because it's for this very small group. There's also legislation that's going to come out about a 2% test, and people are already asking us, we need that 2%. It's not the 1%, it's the 2% that are right above the 1%. And people are already asking us, where's the 2% test? We want the 2% test. As has been mentioned, resources are challenging here. The federal government, of course, hasn't come out with those guidelines on what they will allow the 2% test to look like. So we waited. They said it would be, I don't know, I'm going to have to go back in calendars. And I've got many versions, obviously, I can use. and say it was supposed to be last year, and then it was supposed to be 2 months later, and it was supposed to be this fall, and now they're telling us this spring, and now I'm hearing whispers from federal government that it might be next fall when we get the guidance out for you. I don't want to build a test and then say, oh, we can't use that test. We've got to do a different test. Now, we tried to do some of those things. My predecessor tried to work every piece out of English language learners tests that we did, and that's why the federal government came back to us and said, nope, can't do it. We expressed to them continually our concern of what would happen with districts, about waiting to give us this information on whether we could do it or not, and we got the information in November.
It seems clear that federal changes need to be made, and there is probably bipartisan agreement, and I would hope that we could all work. I don't know the action steps you're going to be taking next, but you're sharing some of the frustration that was expressed here, and let's work together to address that. And Senator Lynch, we're going to get to your question real soon, but Ms. Coney or others, do you have a question or a response to Dr. Mattson?
Well, first, I just want to say that
I think you're really lucky.
Closer to the mic, please, Ms. Gallagher.
I think you're really lucky to have Dirk Mattson working on your behalf. I think he really has a really challenging role to play, and I think he tries really hard to be able to work with school districts. So I, kinds of comments that we make certainly aren't directed toward the work that he does. I guess one of my questions, Dirk, is this gold bronze standard. Okay.
Sure. Mr. Chair, if I may. Thank you for the opportunity. The gold bronze standard, you know, boy, as soon as you said that, I thought, doggone, we should have come up with a different name. Here's what we did. We have tests. We had impetus from legislators in past sessions. We had impetus to get the tests on computer, get them going online by 09. My new slogan is try again in 2010. I'll come up with a new rhyme for 11. By the way, that wasn't our logo. It was developed somewhere else, but we didn't create it.
Good.
Here's what we have. We have an accountability test that I'm required by testing standards to give some kind of control over. You can't just test whenever, because that doesn't make the playing field even. We know, and again, maybe this is a change from my predecessor, I don't know. We know that districts do not have full capabilities to do this. We were going to online 09, and I have just basically kind of just put that in a drawer far, far away and said when computers are there and all the rest of it. And we also have some proposals. I know the governor's recommendation includes significant amounts of money for technology funding to bring all districts up to a certain standard. Because right now there is no standard in Minnesota. Number of computers, T1 lines, all the rest of that. What we attempted to do was actually, and we labeled it wrong, and boy, that was a mistake. We are not going to publish bronze and gold standards. What we basically said was the ideal, and I'm going to, I wish I had made thesaurus with me because it would come up with a different name. The ideal, based on what our requirements are for testing standards, the standards that measurement people say this is how you got to deliver a test to be ethical and appropriate, say that there's got to be kind of an equal opportunity to learn. So the ideal is that we have everybody takes the test on the same day, paper, pencil. That's pretty easy. Well, it's relatively easy. I've been the one boxing up the tests at 11 o'clock at night, quite frankly. But yeah, that's easy. We just flip it out there and say everybody tests on the same day. Except for some districts, there's very few that have one computer per student. So instead of sending out test booklets, now I got to send out computers, and who's going to pay for those? And I don't have them. What we tried to say was, here it is. This is what we really want you to strive for. I don't have the money to fund that to you. But if you can't make that, we're going to allow all of this flexibility. And we started out and we drafted it, and we had the gold and silver and bronze, and it wasn't supposed to be the Olympics, although I think it wound up being. What we basically said is, if you can't meet that, give us a calendar, the bronze standard, and we are going to go back and I hesitate to say redo it because I don't want to redo it. There's another name that can be used for it. Basically saying, if you can't meet that, we're going to allow you flexibility to give this test in a way that you need to do it within your schools. And that's basically what it is. It's kind of like saying level one, level two, level three, I guess, would be the other way I'd do it. We have no intention, none whatsoever, of publishing that. I don't even have time to publish it. We are basically just requesting that districts notify us that we don't have the technology, and that's also something we would bring back to this committee and others to say, we're in a quandary. I've often compared myself to being the guys with one foot on the dock, one foot on the boat, and the boat has been released from the dock by ropes, and I am trying to hold them together because we got computerized testing going and I got paper testing, and my legs are getting tired, I will tell you.
Thank you. Before I open it up to the committee, would anyone else like to pose a question to Dr. Mattson or comment further?
Mr. Chairman, my comment isn't so much for Dr. Mattson, but maybe for the committee as a whole. As you can hear, a lot of this is about an ill-conceived, unnecessarily rigid federal law and the regulations that accompany it. To speak to Mr. Bartholomew's point, nobody at this table is against standards. Nobody at this table is against testing to measure how we do against those standards. But when policymakers at the federal level, and I must add sometimes at the state level, put pressure on the department and the education professionals in the department to have the airplane take off and build it in the air, with inadequate resources, it makes it harder for us to accomplish what we all agree we need to accomplish, which is tests that measure how we're doing against the standards. So with all due respect to Mr. Bartholomew's point, we all agree at the 30,000-foot level. Some of us are down on the ground trying to make it happen, and it ain't going so well. That's the point we're trying to make today.
Mrs. Coney.
Mr. Chair, members, if I may, one final comment is just that the problem with it is that then that is the final stake in the ground. That's your star rating. And people open the paper up and they say, ooh, one star, two star, three star. That's the problem. If this was something that, you know, oh, we'll give it a try, we have no basis. This is the only basis on which we say your school is this way. That's the problem as I see it.
Thank you. And if everyone could remain, Senator Lynch.
Oh, thank you, Chair Uyghur. This has been a real challenge for me. And I do have a couple of questions and a couple of comments, and due to the fact that we spend $9 million a year in the department on this issue, I think that these are pertinent questions. The state of Minnesota, this question is for Dr. Mattson. Specifically, the state of Minnesota is currently on mandatory oversight by the federal government, namely because our alternative assessments have not been completed. And so it would be helpful to communicate to our districts what the plan is and when they might anticipate that being completed.
Dr. Mattson.
Mr. Chair, Senator, we have, I will say, the challenge of communicating to school districts is always challenging because there is a trickle-down effect to get it to exactly the folks that need the information most. I will say that we have done everything that, and I shouldn't say we've done everything. We've done everything I can think of, which may not be a lot, but we've got 25 other people. I have resources developed attributed to this test, including myself, of trying to communicate weekly on where we are with this test. We've announced testing calendars. We've tried to announce we're releasing the items early so that special education teachers can make accommodations with the materials. This test has more flexibility on it than any possible. We've tried to relay our main pipeline is to district, what we call our district assessment coordinators, and that's not their only job, sadly. It's, you know, it would be luxury if it were, but they're the principal and the recess coordinator and on and on and on, and janitor on the weekends. So we have tried to communicate in every way possible. I have guaranteed both special education directors, superintendents, district assessment coordinators. We put out a weekly update to which anyone can be signed up into, including members of the committee if they wish. Where we, our primary audience of that is district assessment coordinators, and I have promised that we will have an update every week on where that test is and being built. We've provided calendars of where we are. I know there are other methods that we can do to communicate that. We are working in collaboration with the special education policy to make sure they're going through their pipelines to do it. It is certainly a challenge to both build the plane and also be on the intercom as flight attendant as well. So we are trying very quickly to let districts know as much as we know. We are building it. And this is an area of psychometrics and testing. This is a brand new world in many ways to try and say we're going to have a standardized test for students whose education is individualized. Now, those are kind of on two different ends of the continuum. And so we have to satisfy the federal government, standardize it, and to satisfy the IEP, the special education law and so on, individualize it. And that is a delicate juggle. So I will say that we try very hard to make that communication clear. I would encourage districts and members of the committee, if they have them, on how we can better communicate the information.
Can I continue?
Thank you.
Continuing on then, Dr. Mattson, I couldn't have agreed more, and I was so pleased when you opened your remarks and you said the name of the game here clearly is about student learning. So I was pleased that that's how the discussion started out. I do feel, and we've had lots of testimonial to this effect, but I'm don't know how else to say this other than to say that the timeline, the results going back to the districts are simply unacceptable. And I don't know how to put that any more lightly.
And I listened to your presentation, particularly the part about why does it take so long and why can't those results get back. I know that this is not a new issue. I would just encourage you to, I've heard those answers, and I guess I would encourage you to take another look at that. And that brings me to another area. And we've heard some talk today about a growth model. I think that there has been some interest demonstrated by a number of entities along those lines. I was disappointed to learn that the federal government offered a pilot program for states to participate in such a modeling program, and I'm disappointed to learn that Minnesota isn't a part of that. I don't know if you'd care to respond.
Dr. Madsen?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator, I'm going to try and recall the first part. Of the constructed response excuse that we've given for the timeline, as I mentioned, I anticipate the results will be much earlier this year because the technical tasks that are needed, and we were one of 10 other states that had similar issues with all the tests being required online. Many states, just like Minnesota, had this extended delay. I don't say I'm satisfied. I didn't dance because I got to wait all the way until November. But we needed to make absolutely sure that our results were right, that they were scaled. When we do the psychometric voodoo in the background, we actually have three checks. We check at the State Department, are the results right? Is the scaling right? Is the equating right? We check with our testing contractor, are the results right? Are the scaling right? We send test documents through. We call the customer service line and ask as if we are a district. So, and we have a third external contractor that's an independent review to say, is the test right? Are the results right? Did they match? If any one of those three don't match, we check, we start again. And that doesn't mean we start from ground zero, but it is so important that the check goes all the way through. I would encourage members of the committee to also I am bound to follow the statute that says I must include those constructed response items in the test. Those have to be scored by humans, and they have to be checked with some measurement statistics to make sure that the people who are scoring them aren't falling asleep, or they're really thinking kids are really nice and giving all fours and not following the guidance of what they're supposed to be scoring. So I do not disagree. I would say that the results should be sooner. The results are going to be sooner this summer, and I can get them to you even sooner if I do not have that statute to follow. But until that time, I must follow that statute. Your second question was about the growth model, and I agree also that Minnesota would like to participate in that. There were two requirements of that did not allow us to participate in that this time around. That was you had to have at least 2 years of data, and our new tests aligned to the new standards. We only had 1 year of data. And the second, as the senators pointed out, that Minnesota was in mandatory oversight by the federal government, and the federal government required that you had full approval of your testing program before you could apply to that growth modeling process. So even if we had been at full approval of our testing program, we did not have the required 2 years of data to demonstrate that. That we still, I insist you have plans to appeal for that.
Senator Rummel, followed by Senators Hahn and Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is directed probably to Mr. Matson or the department, but this is pertaining to the issue that Mr. Kite raised. What is the value we are getting for the dollars we are spending? And I appreciate what the explanation Mr. Matson gave us on the complexity of what we are doing in developing and producing tests that truly align with standards that are vetted, et cetera. So this was very helpful. I want to make sure that you understand that. And then understanding the complexity of the calendar was also very helpful. It's kind of a two-part question. So let me run through the question and see if this is at all helpful. How much does the department actually spend on the testing program? And then how much do our districts spend in addition to that implementing the program? And by way of background, previously we allocated $9 million for testing in the 08 budget coming from the Senate. We will be allocating $18 million. The governor, it looks like, will be allocating $27 million, which is $9 million more than what the Senate is thinking about. So I'm giving you those numbers because I know we're dealing with large sums of money. And so my question is, how much are we spending?
Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Chaz Anderson. I'm the Deputy Education Commissioner, and we don't make Dirk know all the funding issues in education finance. We let him do the testing part. The state right now has a $9 million appropriation. It's for our testing program. We also have an additional $1.15 million that is to implement our growth model that we are currently in process. Just to add on to that, we do have actually on February 23rd a symposium to bring in experts so we can take in input from stakeholders as to how we want our growth model to look. So if you'd like to attend, we can certainly follow up with you and give you that information. On the other end, the department employs 25 FTEs that work on the statewide testing program. They do a number of duties ranging from research to administering the program. And in response to some of the issues we've heard today, the governor is recommending additional expending in testing. One is it basically for the over the 2 years, approximately $9 million, as you talked about. One is for an online computer-based reporting tool. Right now, teachers, if they want their student scores, they have to go grab the files and the paper copies. This would allow them to have a web-based online tool where they would have rights to immediately pull up their student results. They wouldn't have to go to files and try to find them. They could do a lot of studying and manipulation of that information, and it would just allow them to have the information quicker, faster, and be able to use it more effectively. The second one is we have the grad test we're putting in place. As we look at retests and making sure that students have ample opportunity for those retests, we would like to go with an online retest just for the grad portion of the test. And at that point, if we go online, then districts could set the retest schedule for their student, depending on how well they feel they've been remediated, and they could retest. I think they have to minimally wait 6 weeks to do the retesting. So that is why we're asking for additional money on that piece. And the last piece is, as we change standards, we've talked about that, the CHEST test to align to those new standards, and we need to make changes to the test. And that means we have to do item development, which is very extremely expensive. We engage a lot of Minnesota teachers to help us with that, develop the items. We field test them. We come back and look at the information to see if there's bias in the items. Some survive. Some continue forward. And as we do that, that we need additional monies in order to do that. Right now, we are on a six-year revision cycle for our standards that were adopted in 2003 and 2004. We're working on the math revision, and so we just 1 year at a time, we have different standards. The next tested items that we have standards would be science, and that's 2 years out, and then we go language arts, which is 3 years out. And then, of course, when we do change the test, we do have to have time for transitioning to a new test in order to do the item development and the field testing. The last piece that the governor is recommending is additional monies for a computerized diagnostic formative assessment that was voluntary. We've heard here today that they want that instant information and diagnostic information, and the governor is making monies available to develop a voluntary assessment, formative assessment. It's not mandatory. Districts would set the testing time or decide if they even wanted to go into that. And the reason for that, too, is that to ensure alignment to our standards and to our state summative MCA assessment. So the governor is requesting additional monies for testing for very specific activities and purposes. In the overall scheme of things, I believe we spend at the state level about $6.7 billion on public education, and we think with some of these enhancements to the testing program that it will provide school districts with better, quicker information and tools to actually use the data in the classroom as they look at ending the school year and the beginning of the school year. When they get new students, they can easily access that information.
Sarah Rummel.
Thank you very much. I'm in no way challenging his numbers because absolutely this is an extremely expensive enterprise. But if we put together those dollars and the dollars that we spend vis-a-vis, for example, Ms. Gallagher's testimony. In my district, we estimate we spend approximately $1 million complying with the requirements of our state testing. So if we add up the state testing costs at the department, then the state testing costs in the districts, I don't know if we have a real number, but it, you know, my mental math is going quite quickly, quite vaguely. I mean, it seems to me we're pushing up over 100, maybe close to $200 million that we're spending to comply with No Child Left Behind. And we receive about $223 million from the federal government for this purpose. So I'm beginning to wonder if the cost we're spending for what we are fearful of losing might be coming to an intersection. I'm just asking the question, are we receiving enough support to make it worth our while to participate in this program? And I don't know if I expect you to answer this, but I do think those numbers are getting very high, and we ought to think about it.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rummel, those are very excellent points to make. Congress is beginning reauthorization of the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, which is also known as No Child Left Behind. We expect reauthorization to happen in 2008. We're very hopeful that we can make some additional flexibility in the law. Right now, there are some things that we find very difficult to implement at the state level, and I'm sure school districts feel the same way. And we always hope that we can get additional dollars from Congress, although money is extremely tight with their significant deficits. The one issue I will say is that one of the things that Minnesota gets penalized on as they look at the current pool of dollars is that it's based on a formula looking at your poverty rates for each state. So while Minnesota's poverty rate has gone up, other states' poverty has gone up faster than Minnesota. And so what happens is that money gets reallocated from Minnesota as we lose share every year and is sent to other states. And so along with the funding piece, it would be helpful for Minnesota to at least look at how the money is distributed as well, because it appears that we end up on the losing end of that side of the formula.
Thank you. That was very helpful.
Senator Henn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the panel. Appreciate your willingness to come and talk about testing. We had a very interesting meeting last night where we heard others talk about testing, and I'm sure this discussion could go on probably three times the amount of time that we're going to dedicate to it, and I'm sure everyone would love to stay and do it, but I'll be brief. One of the things that I am concerned about a little bit, and the testimony last night and to some extent some of the testimony here today, seems to me to suggest that this, what has been called summative testing against standards, ought to be rejected. That the kind of testing that is most valuable is what has been called authentic testing or testing of progress, and there were people last night that talked about what we really need to know is whether people make progress. And progress is important. Doesn't really, that the secondary importance or maybe of no importance. People said we ought to reject the MCAs altogether, not even have them. And so I'm unclear at this point to know if what we're saying is that we reject the summative form of testing, because as I've heard the testimony, any form of summative testing that you do against a standard is going to have some of these problems that you're talking about inherently in that process. You're going to have a universal way of doing it. You're going to have to test people in the same way. You're going to have some of the problems that are a part of No Child Left Behind and the current laws. I don't know that you can ever eliminate them altogether. And so I want some clarity on that, I guess. Are we saying that we don't want standardized testing, summative-type testing, but only formative-type testing? And if so, how do we get accountability? And in a political system such as we have in our education system today, that's the only way to get accountability, is to have some kind of standard, measure progress against that, and say that the investment we're making makes sense. Now, I do think there are other ways to get accountability. And if any of you would like to join me in bringing about a greater marketplace dynamic, which I think is another way to get accountability, I'd be happy to work with you. But I'd like to know whether we're talking about going to, just a measure of progress as being the satisfactory thing that we ought to work for, or how do we accomplish this testing against standards without some of the problems that you've talked about as being, I think, inherent in the system?
very brief responses from those wishing. And as you indicated, we will be discussing this more. In fact, out at the Edina School District, we will. So.
Charlie Kite, MASA, Senator Hahn, members of the committee, you're asking a good question here. And the question then comes back to what is, how can you identify if the students and the schools are, in fact, meeting high standards? And I'll go back, it sounds like a broken record, in the most efficient way possible. You know, we started out in Minnesota thinking that we could do this without having to test the students formally like this every single year, but that we could test the students periodically, maybe every other year, every third year, and be able to determine how well the schools are doing. We also thought we could start out by where there were large enough populations of students of taking a statistically accurate sample of students rather than taking every single student. You know, when you test every single student, you kind of want to use the results for every single student. If you just want to see how well the school is doing or how well the kids are doing against the standard, what you'd really want to do is say, I want to take the smallest sample possible that will give me the statistical right result. So we have a system right now that requires a lot of testing of a lot of kids in a very formalized way to get ourselves to a set of answers that might not require that in-depth testing in order to get it. I don't know if the word in-depth is quite the right word to use there. Thank you.
Superintendent?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hahn, David Jennings. First of all, let me be clear and tell you that I think that the No Child Left Behind law is a travesty with which we should not endeavor to comply, and we should be, apart from the money and whether or not the money is adequate, we should politely decline and let them keep the money because it ultimately will drive us toward a level of mediocrity that should be unacceptable to us, even if they fully fund it. Having said that, I think we need, the short answer to your question is we need both summative and formative tests. But they need to be thoughtfully designed around what it takes to accomplish higher levels of student achievement and fully funded and administered in a thoughtful way. And, make it a system that's possible for schools to administer and then be willing to pay the cost of it if it's worth it. If tests are required to measure student achievement, then let's have tests. Let's have the tests actually measure that, and then let's pay for the tests. Let's not say that that's something that just comes out of the budget. The accounting system today that the state has for us doesn't have us track the cost of testing separately and report it in a way that's useful in that respect. Thank God, because if it did, and we reported it, we'd be beat up for not being inside the 70-30 standard. So it's just as well that we can't report it that way. But I do think getting to the actual cost and then being willing to pay for it if we really think it's worth it is a good idea. But it should be a Minnesota test designed for what Minnesota sets as a standard for its students. We should not be hostage to this ridiculous federal box that has been created that guarantees ultimately mediocrity.
We have several questions and we're almost out of time. I'm going to ask Senator Olson, who had a follow-up, and then we will continue the conversation at a future meeting. Senator Olson?
It may be a topic for a little bit more discussion, but as I heard, the vast number that are using the MAP or the Northwest Educational Testing, and I appreciate very much. I heard a lot of enthusiasm about what that does. But I also heard Deputy Commissioner Anderson say that we've got money spent kind of to develop our own system like that. So in other words, we have a lot of schools that like what that process and what that does, but it isn't aligned with our standards. So the measuring that you're doing is measuring, obviously, learning, but it isn't totally consistent. So we're going to have to go through the motions of spending money to try to develop our own NWEE counterpart, or is there a way of working with that company or with that system so that some of that that adaptation could be there, that we wouldn't have to go through that entire exercise. Because I do agree, we have the summit, the formative and the summative, and part of this is coming from the fact that we do resist standardizing standards. Where as a state, we want to keep some of that identity, and that's part of the problem we're doing, because it's a costly process if you're going to develop those standards and go through doing valid and reliable assessments. It takes this process that makes you sit here and your eyes glaze over because you think, how in the world can anybody endure having to go through all of that?
But Ms. Anderson?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, the Department of Education will not on its own develop a formative assessment. As we have with our summative assessment, we will put out an RFP. Vendors can bid on that. NWA could bid on that. And so we have to do that. We can't just single source select a company, and we, our Department of Administration would never allow that to happen. But we would have to go through this with the partners. We do not have the staff or capacity to build a test on our very own. So if the legislature should agree and give us that funding, we would have to go through a process, a competitive process for that.
So, Mr. Chair, I, with the numbers that are participating in this particular system, is there a strongly competitive system or company that could deliver on that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, there are a lot of testing companies out there that could claim to deliver a lot of things. So okay. I don't think we'll lack in people wanting to respond. I will say that in 2005, when this issue was before the legislature as well, and knowing the interest that schools had in the NWEA, we were very interested in doing our own alignment study with the NWEA tests and with our Minnesota standards. We spent a good 6 months trying to get technical information from the company. We couldn't get that. It may have been because it was proprietary and they didn't want to give us that information, so I don't want to suggest that there was something wrong with not giving it to us. But we have made attempts to try to figure out if there's alignment or how much alignment there is, and because we have a lot of schools using that, and we do hear some thoughts of that. We know they're not aligned, but that students may do well in the NWEA, but then somehow they're not doing as well in the state MCA test. So we have made attempts to try to bridge that, and for reasons, probably proprietary reasons, we cannot get that information.
Thank you.
Senators Jungbauer, Torres Rey, and Bonhoff, each of you has 30 seconds to express a comment or a question that we may ponder over the next few days.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a great subject to ponder. I am in possession of the Education Department letter of 6 November 2006. And looking at that and looking at Statute 120B, it appears that our state benchmarks in the federal government may be in opposition or diversion, and if that is the case in trying to resolve some of these things, we might want to look at that more as a committee, because the Minnesota Department of Education may be in violation of the actual statute, and we need a lot more transparency in what's going on here, the way I'm reading the statute.
Thank you, Senator Jungbauer. Senator Torres Rey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to know if we can get some information about the cost of compliance, because going back to Senator Rummel's comment about if testing alone costs about $100 million, and I don't know how much money we get from the federal government, but if we are spending about $300 million just to comply, and then none of the results or the things that we're doing to comply really move us forward with any of the work that we want to do with the kids, I don't know why we do this. I have no idea why we're doing it. And I would like to know if we can get specific numbers about just the cost, but also and not just the monetary cost, but the energy and the lack of efficiency in this process. Is that possible? Can we have that information?
Mr. Chair, Senator, we've actually asked that directly of the federal government. Actually, one state who's been closest to threatening to opt out of No Child Left Behind, Utah, okay. Specifically received a response from then-Secretary Page, I believe it was.
Okay. Well, Ms. Harrison, we will
look for that. It was all
that.
Of the money that we receive under the program. If we did not comply, if we failed the test, failed to comply with the regulations, that we would lose our federal funding.
We'll further pursue the fiscal impact on time as well. And Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you. I will be brief. Two areas to raise. One is with regard to the special education. I think we're working in partnership, knowing this doesn't make the best sense, that we're having these special ed kids at the same standards. So while I can have appreciation for the dilemma of that, I'm asking that we look at our report card so that the very, you know, we are deciding what is the 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever stars. I do not think it's appropriate for us to punish our schools when these subgroups are not making grade, when we know that it's not their fault. It's, you know, they can't control who walks in the door. And so I would ask that we work in partnership to say, yes, this doesn't make sense, but then let's look at how that's playing out in this public report card, because that's so punitive. And then the second comment is with regard to technology. And I've seen that the governor's proposal has about $39 million in technology, which is an area I'm very committed to. I'm concerned as I hear the conversation about getting everybody online by 09 that we don't use up, or whatever, 2010, that we don't use our precious resources to get everybody testing online rather than advancing student learning. So I understand the governor is also allocating separate money for those efforts, but I just want to raise that question. Are we using technology in the way that's best for kids? Thank you.
Thank you. On behalf of the committee panelists, thank you very much for sharing your insights. We look forward to working more with you on this issue as the session unfolds. Thank you, members, for your kind attention, and this meeting's adjourned.
Superintendent.